Well, I guess we'll get started here today with our class. Book of Exodus, part 6. We're going to be in chapter 7 of Exodus today. I didn't give a handout with the verses today, but we're going to be in chapter 7. Pretty much most of the class, so not too much jumping around. So we'll start there today. It's been kind of our schedule for our scripture reading has kind of been following right along with in Exodus here, so we get a little preview every week. But I was thinking today when about the frogs and that plague. If I was Pharaoh, that might have been enough for me. Right? I don't like that. Oh man, boy, about the first one of them I saw in my bed, I would be done. Get these people out of here. There's a lot more to the story than that, I guess. So we're going to start in chapter 7. We saw when we ended last, a couple weeks ago, I guess, at the end of chapter 6. Again, we saw where Moses was hesitant, maybe. And he uses the excuse, again, that he's unskilled in speech. And maybe it's not, we've talked about this too, maybe it's not so much an excuse. Maybe it's a reality. Moses just struggles, with his speech. And we've talked also about how his upbringing, he was raised up as an Egyptian. So maybe he struggled to communicate more with the Hebrew people as well, too. So it might be unfair to always refer to it as an excuse. It might be a legitimate issue that Moses had. He struggled to speak with the people. But that's kind of how we left off. Again, Moses was unsure maybe about moving forward. So we're going to see how things start to unfold as it moves forward here. Exodus 7, and we can just kind of randomly read if you'd like today. You got something?
I have a quick question.
Yeah. Well, that's what I think. Yeah.
Like somebody that comes, that's like born, say in like Brazil, then moves here for 40 years and never speaks it to anybody. I mean, you're obviously going to be probably rusty, I would imagine.
Right.
Even so, not only did the Jews, to the Israelites, maybe had some problems there, but even going back to talking, speaking the Egyptians was probably a little bit of trouble too, in just the language.
I think that there's a lot to think about there, because just like you're saying, both the Hebrew and the Egyptian language he probably knew. I mean, obviously the Egyptian he knew quite well. He was, he was 40 years old when he left Egypt, but then he was gone for 40 years in that region that he went to. There's a pretty good possibility they had a different language. It's not uncommon at all for, especially in those times, different people, different region, they had a different language. I mean, it's still pretty similar like that today, especially in. You got something right there.
So it was mentioned 40 years of being an Egyptian, he thought like one, walked like one, talked like one, body language, everything that culture had as a form of communication would interfere with, and maybe even, conflict with the Hebrew folks.
Yeah.
It'd been a challenge,
yeah. He has to go back, not necessarily, to his native land from a foreign land, and be the leader of these people, and he can't even hardly talk to them. I mean, it wouldn't be an easy thing by any means. So I think the fact that he's, a lot of times Moses has always been painted as this guy that he's unwilling to do it, and he's always looking for an excuse. And I think there could have been he could have had some reservations, but I think a lot of it was legitimate concerns. He didn't know how to do it and couldn't do it maybe. But we see where God, He doesn't give him a task that he can't do, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's probably part of it there. We find ourselves also doing that. Probably we're unsure of what we can do, but we probably need to. What God's asking Moses to do, he was going to help him do it.
So, right.
And that's probably how we should take care of that too. If there's something to do, we should have the idea that God's on our side, and we should just go ahead and do it.
Right.
And probably not an excuse for Moses, but it was probably something that he needed to work into.
I think so, yeah. Yep, Kirk.
Tom said the Greek word for unskilled means uncircumcised. So I don't know if it's necessarily a language deal. I don't think maybe Moses actually had some trouble speaking. But the thing still is you mentioned before about the God doesn't give us more task than him. You know, like in that situation, God's asking him to do it, so he's not asking him to do it knowing that he's going to fail.
Right.
But in some ways, you know, sometimes you sit and think, well, you got to have like good speech. So, like, for example, I can't think of his name now. The big guy in Texas, the big
Mexican.
No, the prosperity gospel guy.
Joel
Osteen. Okay, so he's a great speaker. Okay, so as far as how he communicates, he wouldn't have got what he got if he wasn't. And so I think in Moses' situation, Moses being unskilled, it's going to sort out the people who are going to listen because they're going to totally know, like, not really give him the time of day if he's unskilled.
Right.
Anyway, and so it's going to, the people who really want to listen to the truth,
right.
That's
another angle, though. Okay, that's a good thought, though, because if he was, you know, they're not going to be captivated by this great speaker. The only way they're going to have to listen to what he's saying and believe what he says, you know, for it to be effective. So there's a lot of thought to that too, for sure. Okay, so would somebody like to read? Oh, Ken, go ahead. Aaron would have been raised as with the Israelites, as a Hebrew. Yep, he was older than Moses, and when the time when he was born, there wasn't the decree from Pharaoh to kill the young boys, and so he was able to be raised, you know, with those people, and he lived with them, you know, throughout this time. When Moses was gone for all those years, Aaron was still there, you know, among the people. So they would have, you know, probably recognized Aaron more, and they, you know, he would have been able to relate with them a lot easier.
Sorry, I'll
let you. Yeah. No, you're fine.
But also, when Moses came, like, Aaron gathered the leaders of the Israelites too.
He did, yeah.
He most likely was a respected man.
Yeah.
And possibly even one of the leaders of them at the time.
So. Yeah, I think so. Okay, would someone like to read verses 1 through 7?
Then the Lord said to Moses, "See, I make you as God to Pharaoh and your brother Aaron as your prophet. You shall speak all the command that I command you, and your brother Aaron shall speak to Pharaoh that he let the sons of Israel go out of his land. But I will harden Pharaoh's heart that I might multiply my signs and my wonders in the land of Egypt. When Pharaoh will not listen to you, then I will lay my hand on Egypt and bring my host, my people, the sons of Israel, from the land of Egypt by great judgments. And the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord when I stretch out my hand on Egypt and bring out the sons of Israel from their midst." So Moses and Aaron did it as the Lord commanded them. Thus they did. And Moses was 80 years old and Aaron 83 when they spoke to Pharaoh.
Okay, so we see God again tells Moses, you know, to go speak. And he tells him in verse 1 there, he says, "See, I make you as God to Pharaoh, and your brother Aaron shall be your prophet." So through Moses and through Aaron, Pharaoh's going to see who God is. And Moses is having a hard time speaking, so he gives him Aaron. He says, "You talk to Aaron, and you tell him what I tell you. And then Aaron will talk to Pharaoh, and through him, you know, this process will be done." And again, as we had read in some previous chapters, God, he kind of gives them a heads up here, really, even. He tells them, go talk to Pharaoh, but he's not gonna let the people go. So that they know when they go, they're kind of figuring out now when they go talk to Pharaoh, things don't go very good for them. Because remember before, they went and talked to Pharaoh, and what did he do? He made things way harder for the Israelites, right? So they're thinking, man, we're going to go talk to this guy again. And God's already telling us, that he's not going to really listen. He said he's going to have a hardened heart. But then God maybe encourages them a little bit. He says he's going to multiply his signs and his wonders in the land of Egypt. And the one note I wanted to bring out of this passage for us to kind of think about and to carry on here a little bit is in verse 5. He says, the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord. So throughout this process, God has told Moses that basically when I'm done, they're going to know who the true God is. And we're going to, I don't want to jump ahead too much here, but we're going to get into that some today. The Egyptians had numerous, their gods, or, their powerful gods. And there's, possibly maybe even hundreds of them. But there's some of their main ones, and there's certain ones. We're gonna start to look at that and kind of how that parallels with the different plagues. So that just a couple thoughts to as we move forward. And so let's go on to the next section here, verses 8 through 13, and we kind of see what happens here when they go to Pharaoh. Okay, so here's the famous part of the story, I guess, where they throw down the staff and it becomes the serpent, and then the magicians come in and they're able to do the same thing. So I mean, there's some powers here that are working for sure, through the other side, you could say. But the thing that we need to note here is when they did that, Aaron's staff swallowed up all of theirs. So that's the first indication there that whatever your gods or whatever powers you have can do, my God can do more. And maybe compared to some of the things that are going to come, maybe that was a subtle hint, but it was still there showing that, they offered what they could do, but it wasn't enough. God or Pharaoh's, Aaron's staff was able to consume them. And in verse 13, it said, Pharaoh's heart was hardened, and he did not listen to them as the Lord had said. And now we've talked some about before about the hardening of the heart. And is that something that God has forced upon Pharaoh? It says earlier in verse 3, he says, I will harden Pharaoh's heart that I may multiply my signs. Is Pharaoh a guy that wants to do what's right, but God's not allowing him? Or what do you guys think on the idea of hardening of the heart there? Anybody got any thoughts? Kirk?
Well, the Hebrew word, it means to strengthen. It doesn't mean to make. It means to strengthen. He's just strengthening what already is there.
That's right, yeah. So, we want to, Pharaoh's not just a little puppet where God's pulling the strings. Pharaoh's doing what he wants to do. His pride is pushing him, I guess, to have this hardened heart.
I think you can have it. You already have it.
Yeah. Okay. Why don't you read that? If we want, let's jump over to the New Testament and look at here in Romans. Kind of another, I think, a good example of the idea of a hardened heart or man's idea Flipped over here to Romans, first chapter. If somebody would like to read that passage, Romans 1, 18 through 25.
For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. Because that which is known about God is evident within them, God made it evident to them, for since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood through what has been made, so that they are without excuse. For even though they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks, but they became futile in their speculations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the incorruptible God for an image in the form of corruptible man and of birds and four-footed animals and crawling creatures. Therefore God gave them over to the lusts of their hearts, to impurity, so that their bodies would be dishonored among them, for they exchanged the truth of God for a lie, and worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen.
Okay, thank you. So I think this is a good a parallel passage or idea to go along with this idea of having a hardened heart. And a couple of things that I think are important here in verse 18 is those who suppress the truth. It's that's something that Pharaoh, we'll see him continue to do as we move along here. And then the idea of professing to be wise, they became fools. I mean, that's an age-old saying, too. But he, his pride and his wisdom, caused a lot of problems for himself and the whole nation of Egypt. If he would have not suppressed the truth from the beginning, it would have saved them a lot of turmoil. And then in verse 21, for even though they knew God, and what did God tell Moses? He said, when I'm done, they're going to know that I'm God. And it's not that they just didn't have a clue that this God was out there. They just chose not to follow him. But when he was done with them, they're going to know without a doubt there's one true God. And Pharaoh didn't have any more excuses or any different reasons to not believe God than any other person there was. Just as we read here, and in verse 25, it says that they exchanged the truth of God for a lie, and they worshipped and served the creatures rather than the Creator. The things that they worshipped and their gods and the things that they had were things of this world, right? They weren't the true God. They weren't the Creator. And we're going to see where the power of those gods is not only greatly diminished but destroyed, right there in front of them. So that brings us about a little bit. We're going to talk about the plagues, and we're going to get into a little bit today, the beginning of that. And there's 10 of these big plagues that God brings upon them. And we see, they kind of just go in order, as we see coming, over the next days and weeks in Exodus here. And I ask the question, does God randomly do things without a purpose? And is the number 10 have any significant meaning? Why is there 10 of these plagues? And I just wonder if anybody had any comments or any thoughts on 10. I know Kirk has talked about numbers and the significance of certain numbers several times, over the years through class, too. So go ahead, Roy. Right, that's one of them. Yeah, there's 10. What you kind of would refer to as their main gods or their main deities. So that's I think that's one parallel. That's not a coincidence, I don't think. The number 10 itself, does that stand out as anything?
Well, 10 means
Right. Ten means complete or completeness. Some of the examples that I found, some of them I knew, but a couple of them I thought were kind of interesting. In Genesis chapter 1, the phrase "God said" was used 10 times. So with him saying that 10 times, the whole world was created. The complete creation was made within. And that might be a coincidence, I don't know. I'm not sure. Something to think about, though. And obviously, you know, the Ten Commandments. You know, to follow and observe the entirety of the law was contained within those Ten Commandments, right? If you follow those ten, you've completed it, right? Passover lamb was selected on the 10th day of the first month. Maybe it was just a date that was picked. I don't know. One that I thought was interesting that I never put together, that from creation till the time of the flood, there was 10 generations. So, you know, in 10 generations there, you know, what was completed there? I don't know. Maybe, you know, the sinful mankind, or, you know. And I also, the number 10, it's can have kind of a meaning of the main meaning is completeness, but it also can kind of go along with the idea of obedience, as, you know, the example of like following the law, or a complete obedience, maybe is the a good way to describe it. You know, so throughout these 10 plagues, we're going to see where the Egyptians are completely plagued, for, you know, lack of a proper term to say that, but I mean they're consumed by these 10 things. Maybe that's a good way to say it. So I think it's not a coincidence that there's 10 of them. I think that, and probably not necessarily a coincidence, the order of which they came either. We see where maybe the level is a little higher each time. And not only is Pharaoh going to see these, but the entire nation is as well. They're going to understand the significance of these plagues. So we're going to have 10 of them, and I made a list here, and we're going to go back with each plague and kind of touch on the gods, or the significance of the gods of the Egyptians that I feel like God is, you know, singling out and kind of destroying with each plague. He's showing them that, hey, you have this god that does this for you. Well, I'm going to come and I'm going to do this, and your gods are going to do nothing for you. And he's going to show them throughout their most high, powerful gods, he's going to trump every one of them. So the first one, I probably won't say these right, but is Hapi or Hapi, is a god of the Nile. And then Heket, the goddess of fertility or water or renewal. And she was always pictured with the head of a frog. You know, the Egyptians were famous for their, you know, their drawings, and, you know, you get a lot of visual things from the Egyptians. She was always pictured with the head of a frog. And then Jeb was god of the earth. And then Capri was god of creation, movement of the sun, and had the head of a fly. Again, like the other god, you know, was pictured as, like, its head was a fly. And then five, we have Hathor, or Hathar, the goddess of love and protection, was depicted with the head of a cow. Which, I mean, they're kind of strange, but these gods are strange, but, you know, they had some strange ideas. So, and then Isis, or Isis maybe, was a god of medicine and peace. And then Nut was goddess of the sky. And then Seth, god of storms and disorder. And Ray was the god of the sun. And then always, Pharaoh himself was considered to be the highest of all gods to the Egyptians. He was the greatest of all. I mean, and we saw earlier where Pharaoh asked the question, who is this Lord that's going to tell me? You know, there's nobody greater than me. I'm the highest of all gods, right? Not only did the Egyptians hold them to that standard, Pharaoh also believed himself to be that person as well. So we kind of see that. And like I said, we'll kind of talk about each one as we go through the plagues. And we're probably only going to get into one today. So the first plague, I guess, we're going to kind of see here in verses 14 through 19. If somebody would like to read that, please. Okay, so here the instructions that the Lord gave to Moses. Pharaoh's heart is stubborn. Another good term for it. He's a stubborn guy. He refuses to let him go. So go out to Pharaoh in the morning when he's down by out by the river, or out to the water, and meet him there on the bank of the Nile. And take your staff, the one you turned into a serpent. And then he tells them to, you know, how he's going to turn the water into blood, and that's going to convince, or going to show Pharaoh, not convince him, it's going to show Pharaoh who the power of God. And one thing about, and not only that I want to point out here too, is it's not only the river that they had turned into blood, right? And that's what, I mean, that's the most common, that's what you remember, you know, throughout the story, you know, the Nile is turned to blood. But in, like in verse 19 there, the Lord says to Moses, say to Aaron, take your staff and stretch out your hand over the waters of Egypt, over the rivers, over their streams, over their pools, and over the reservoirs of water, that they may become blood, and there shall be blood throughout all the land of Egypt. So, I mean, just think of the implications of something like this. I mean, if something like this happened, I mean, it's incredible. And if it was just the river, you could think, well, they can go somewhere else and get water. But I think, you know, having an understanding of what the Nile River was to Egypt, especially at that time, I think is important too. I mean, it was, I mean, pardon the pun, but it was the lifeblood of their society. It was their transportation. It was their water. It was their means of food. I mean, the fish from there was an incredible source of their food. I mean, a lot of things were destroyed at this moment. And incredible when you really think about the depth of this plague. I mean, how the burden that it put upon the people. And one thing I've always wondered is, did this include the waters that the Hebrew people had access to as well? I don't know. Because we know that the first time that Moses and Aaron went and talked to Pharaoh, they were pretty upset. They were pretty upset at Moses and Aaron. You know, basically, we were slaves. You went and talked to Pharaoh. Now we're still slaves, but our conditions are quite a bit worse. And I just thought, well, how was their attitude now? Is if these guys went and talked to Pharaoh again, now they can't even drink. And I'm sure under this time, Pharaoh's still expecting them to make their bricks, and he's still expecting them to get their straw. That hasn't changed. He hasn't let that up. You know, it's not like that's just on the back burner now. He's still pressing forward with that. That's why he wants them there. So I think it's, I mean, this is a pretty big hit right here, right off the bat, I think. And again, this ties in, I don't want to jump ahead, I guess, so. Let's go to the end of the chapter here, I guess, in Exodus 20:25.
Servants, all the water that was in
came with their secret arts, and Pharaoh's heart was hardened, and he did not listen to them as the Lord had said. Then Pharaoh turned and went into his house with no concern even for this. So all the Egyptians dug around for water to drink, for they could not drink the water of the Nile. And 7 days passed after the Lord had struck the Nile.
Okay, so we see here when this plan is put into place here. And I think probably by this time, Moses has probably been building some faith. You know, God has done enough stuff now that he's seen that he's probably building some faith. But it makes you wonder, when God told this to Moses, did Moses somehow, or maybe even in the back of his mind, thinking, I don't know, that's kind of far-fetched, turn all this into blood, you know. So I think one thing that happens throughout this story as well is the faith that Moses has and the Israelite people have grows as well. You know, when this is all said and done, the Egyptians are going to know who God is, but so are the rest of the people as well. So this is, maybe judgment or punishment upon the Egyptians, but it's also something that's building faith throughout these people as well. So they do what God says, and this stuff happens just like God said it was going to happen. Exactly like he says it was going to happen. And then again, like we saw with the serpent, the magicians of Egypt, they're able to do something similar. They're able to turn water into blood or, do something similar as well. So Pharaoh put his trust in his own gods instead of the true God again. You know, he saw enough there to basically reassure him that, hey, our gods are still in power. And he refused to acknowledge, the true God. Again, this is a story that we know, I guess. So we're going to continue to see this over and over and over again. The attitude, I guess, that Pharaoh has, and we'll see where it softens some here and there. But the kind of underlying theme is that these things happen to Egypt, and as soon as they get just a little bit of relief from it, then Pharaoh hardens his heart again and is right back, basically to where he started. And we talked about the gods of Egypt. This Hapi or Happy was the god of the Nile, was completely unable to protect the river. And I mentioned the Egyptian magicians were able to do enough to satisfy Pharaoh. See, they were able to maybe turn a little bit of water into blood and convince him that the gods were still in power. But this god of the Nile was completely, completely unable to do anything with the Nile River. They couldn't change the blood back into water. Couldn't save the river from being destroyed, or all of the water. Not only the water, but all the inhabitant of the water. You can imagine a bunch of dead, rotting fish in a river of blood. It wouldn't be a great thing to be around, I'm sure. So this god of the Nile, this great river, probably one of the highlights of the nation of Egypt, probably one of their proudest possessions was this Nile River, and they even had it had its own god under their system, was completely destroyed by the Lord. And this is the first example we see here where not only is God showing his power to the people, he's showing the people that their God has no power over him. And I think this is part of his process that he told them that when I'm done, you're going to know who I am. And you're going to know that your gods are nothing. And this is going to continue on as we go through each one of the plagues. There's a God that the Egyptians have that it's specifically attacked, maybe is the best word to say. He's going to throw something at them like, you have a God that you hold in esteem basically for this purpose or this, this portion of your life. It's not going to help you. And it continues to show that. Kirk, yes, go ahead.
And as you're reading there, kind of going back to what you were saying about the Israelites had the same happen to them, but it says there the land of Egypt, and there was a lot of times in Exodus, even in Genesis, and in Genesis where it separates the land of Joseph and the land of Egypt. The Israelites, when they came there, they were in the land of Goshen.
Right.
It was detestable to the Egyptians, so they weren't in the land of Egypt. And probably with the theme a little later, he didn't even specify that the land of Goshen didn't get displayed.
Right. That's right, and it does say it, yeah, I can't remember if it's in, I think it's in our next chapter we're going to see where it separates that land, and that's a good point, because I think that's also probably another way where, you know, the Egyptians are going to see this stuff's happening to us, but it's not happening to them, because if there's no separation there, it might not be as significant as well either. So the fact that they were suffering, but these slaves that they've been bonded for all these years are not suffering these same plagues is going to have an effect on, you know, the purpose of what God's doing, I think.
And then another question, how did the Egyptians, how were they able to mimic the serpent and the blood?
Well, the only answer I can think for that is, I think God allowed them to do that, allowed them to do that. So, you know, to give them the example that possibly that, you know, you can do this, but I can do something greater. I mean, the power had to come from him for them to be able to do that, is what I think.
So, I guess one thing, it's like the movie, the cartoon, The Prince of Egypt, when they do this plague, the one priest turns around and tears like a little Kool-Aid packet. Yeah, so, I mean, that could be God allowing them to do it, but I actually think it's the power of demons not that they're above God or anything.
Right. He allowed more. He didn't give them the power. He allowed them to do it more. Yeah, I think.
And they got their power from demons, and the demons are actually false gods.
When, yeah.
When Paul says in 1 Corinthians 10, he's talking about them not sacrificing the demons, the idols. He says when you sacrifice the idols, you're sacrificing the demons, he says. And so I think that the demons are all false gods, and God's all earth. Demons are fallen angels.
Right.
God. And so God's taken them out of the way one by one.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. Yeah. Yeah, I like the cartoon examples, though. And maybe some of that, maybe there was some, you know, just trickery. They did that to trick Pharaoh, too, you know, possibly, too, you know. But it does say that the magicians of Egypt did the same thing with their secret arts, so... I mean, I don't think, you know, I think they probably actually were able to do it. You know, I don't think they just did something, you know, to deceive him. I think what he saw was probably real.
Yeah, well, I don't know but, for sure how they, I mean, they could have tricked something with a snake, but if it was a snake, not many guys just have
yeah,
snake.
Exactly, yeah. So, yeah, interesting. I mean, obviously, definitely a tug of war here, I guess, a little bit of the powers to be, I guess, for sure happening. Yes, Roy.
If after this they basically leave Egypt, that Egypt descends, right, from its former glory.
Right.
I mean, this is kind of like the end. God comes in and reveals all these false gods. And so the world, everybody else knows that he's the one true God. I guess, I don't know if it correlates, but then Egypt kind of diminishes. I'm not sure if you know that history. I don't know for sure. It's more of a question.
I don't know a great deal there, but that's a good question, though. And, you know, so we should look into that a little bit, maybe. But possibly, you know, after all this stuff happened, you know, the Egyptian people probably were pretty deflated. You know, all the stuff that they've always believed in has been destroyed. And then, you know, probably surrounding people and surrounding nations that probably respected and feared and looked upon Egypt probably didn't much anymore either. You know, they saw them basically be humbled and falling apart, so.
I think so. They became kind of like fractured.
And, yeah. Yeah. Kyle?
30% of the population that lived there was now all of a sudden gone. More than that, because a bunch of Egyptians died.
Right.
You know, so the Israelites were not numbered greater than the Egyptians. So from outside looking in, all the other nations would never saw was an Egyptian. These people, and they, you know, so there was, you know, whatever, one
Yeah, really kind of destroyed within you know, the country itself. Yeah, some good points there. I mean, just those are just common sense. I mean, that's just what happened. It's just reality. Like I said, the population itself was cut down immensely.
And even the Egyptians, the best ones.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, I mean, it's, to me, as we've been going through this, you know, all these plagues and this story, it's like, we know all this stuff, but then when you kind of look at some of the details, like, you really understand, maybe get a better understanding, I guess, of, you know, the significance and the power that God displayed, you know, throughout, you know, it wasn't just these little events that happened. I mean, they were significant, and the way they were put together was, I mean, no, nobody other than God could do this. Yeah, and yeah, I mean, discredited them, and then like that point there. I mean, in a roundabout way, it really brought to the end of that great nation too. It really did, because I think after, you know, and it spiraled downhill quickly, I guess, you know, from this point on. So, and it was never been the same since.
Or prove God's real.
Yeah, and I mean that was his intent with these plagues. I mean, he could have taken those people out of there at any time. You know, he could have just snatched them from Pharaoh, or he could have destroyed Pharaoh. I mean, but that wasn't his goal. His goal was to show them, I am the true God. That was his intention, and that's what the purpose of the plagues were. And I think, you know, obviously he said that to Pharaoh, that, you know, when this is done, he's going to know that I'm God, and he's going to drive these people from this land. But I can't help but think as well that that Hebrew nation knew who God was at that point too. You know, when they left there, you know, it wasn't under the idea that I don't know who this God is, but he's letting us out of here, so let's go. You know, they understand. I mean, this is our God that did this for us. So, and we know through, you know, after they get up, you know, leave, you know, they go through their struggles for sure, but, you know, with faith and whatnot as well. But there's really no reason they don't know who God is well either. So. Well, that's kind of what I had today. We're going to see, can just continue on as we go into next weeks, just to see this power that God has. He just unleashes it upon them more and more all the time. So I think it'll be good to see, I guess. Appreciate the comments and the insights, I guess, that we get from this. So.